Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 2371 of the Moving Spotlight Podcast.
Wow, so many. I can't believe we went through that many already.
is that not accurate?
No, it's not.
It's not? Well, we'll get our data team to check that out. I think it's pretty close.
Yeah. I am the data team, and it's not right.
That's just Corbin. Hey, everybody, I am John Ruby. This is my main man.
Corbin Quayle. Hey, everyone.
We are not on that episode. I can't even remember what number I said, but we are excited to be here. Right, Corbin?
Oh, we're so excited. This is going to be a great one.
This is going to be a really good one. I want to talk about something very fun and very near and dear to my heart because I have a six-year-old son right now. Corbin, what is your favorite animated movie?
I love animated stuff just in general, but favorite animated movie, I'll give you two answers, because one is like anime, like I would say like Princess Mononoke. I don't know if you've ever seen that movie, but that movie is so good. I've watched that so many times, and it's a long movie, so it's like, it's impressive that I like go through it. It's just in a blink of an eye. It's like, I want to say close to 3 hours. Beautiful movie, all hand-drawn. It's just, I'm floored by it every time. And then also, I just, like, my favorite childhood movie was The Lion King. That movie is just so good. It's so sad, and you're going to cry every time when, you know, spoiler alert. Yeah, if you haven't seen it. When Scar is a monster, it's just heart-wrenching. I love that movie and to this day. And, even, like, Toy Story. Like, any of those childhood movies, like, those are still near and dear in my heart for sure. What about you?
It's crazy how good those can be and how much they can still hold up or still resonate. And I was thinking when you said Lion King, I saw that the musical Lion King, and it's so cool. Have you seen the musical of it, Corbin? What they do where they have people playing the animals and stuff.
Yeah.
Oh, it's really like, it's really well done. It's a great story. And then it's just so cool to see. For me, you know, when my son was little, he was watching Boss Baby with Alec Baldwin over and over again. And I got to tell you, that movie cracks me up. Like, it's so good. Alec Baldwin is so good as this little baby being the boss. It's so really funny.
I've never seen it. So what if we do a little best bad acting? What's your favorite line?
Oh my gosh. I got to think about what my favorite line is. Now, that was a couple of years ago, but it's just resonated with me. I think one of my favorite moments is the kid is trying to he's chasing the boss baby, the brother, and they do it like an action sequence. So it's like he's running, and then he grabs onto like the back of like the boss baby, the little car he's driving. And then they cut to the parents watching. And in the action sequence, it's going so fast. And they cut to the parents watching, and the little car is moving so slow. But like in the kids' minds, it's like
wow, this is amazing.
Exactly. I feel like that's like childhood. We're like, that's so big, and that was crazy. And then you go back later in life, and you're like, that slide was not that big. Why did it feel... you know what I mean?
Yeah, totally. An episode ago, we were talking about the rapids water slide that I went on in Hawaii. I remember thinking that was so epic and huge and big. Yeah. And then I went there when I was like an adult, and I was like, oh my God, why was I at all worried? This thing is like 4 feet by 4 feet. It's so crazy when I was a kid.
I will say we went to this thing just Friday night that had like food trucks. It was at the Autry Museum, and they had like in like a bounce house and some like inflatable slides. And one of the ones Quill wanted to do, I had to sign a release form for him. And I'm like, it's just a slide. Why would I sign a release form? And the guy who was like very not interested in doing his job, he was like, the most effort you could give, he was like below that, you know? He was like, he's going to climb up this side, and then, you know, he's either going to come down the slide or he's going to jump off the back or something. I was like, what?
Are there options?
So Quill goes up, he looks over in the backside, and then he comes down the slide. And I was like, okay. And then as we walked around, the back, I've never seen this in an inflatable, was like a 20-foot drop-off.
That he might just jump off at any point?
That he could have just jumped off the back. That was what the ride was. So kids, so there's a slide on the front if they kind of get scared. But off the back, I have never seen it, Corbin. It was like a 20-foot inflatable drop-off, like a stuntman drop-off. And I'm like, that's why I signed the waiver, because Quill could have broken his neck. And kids were doing it, but I was like, this seems a little extreme.
Jeez. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. I
looked up at it. I was like, on the opposite end of it, not being scared. I was like, that's like intimidating.
Yeah. That's too much. My friend, when he was a kid, he would climb trees and all this stuff. And I would just always be at the bottom of the tree going, Ryan, you shouldn't be up there. So Ryan, I would definitely never have jumped off that. There's been no chance in my life that I would have been like, that seems like a safe move, even at 4.
No. And I'm like, I'm kind of mad at my dad radar, because as I'm signing the waiver, I'm like, oh yeah, he's just going to go up there and be fine. You know what I mean? It didn't, like, nothing went up. I've never signed a waiver for any of those things before. So, Luckily, my son has better sense than I guess I do.
Yeah.
So he didn't do that.
You did good parenting earlier, which is good.
Yes.
Yeah.
So Corbin, I want to get to our guest. I'm super excited she's here. She is a super talented casting director, and she's a good friend of mine for many, many years. I want to introduce Cara Sullivan. Cara, welcome to the show.
Hello.
Hi. How are you guys? Thank you for having me.
Yes. Oh my gosh. Thank you for being on.
Thank you for being here. Any thoughts on animated movies, favorites?
I mean, my favorite is The Lion King. I love.
I mean, come on. Yeah. So
they have good song. I like good Disney movies with good songs, because then I buy the soundtrack. Whoa. The Lion King, but the best soundtrack by far is Beauty and the Beast. I think that has the best, like, overall.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know,
yep.
You know.
For one of our anniversaries, Cara, my wife loved Beauty and the Beast. And so it was playing like at the arc light here on the big screen. And so I blindfolded her and I was like driving in circles. And then I was driving to the arc light. I'm like, she's going to have no idea. And then she's like, are we going to Beauty and the Beast at the arc light? I'm like, how does she know that? How did she figure that out? I'm like, she's blindfolded. Like, what? Like, somehow she knew. Like, she had spidey sense.
Well, you guys have been married for how long?
10 years now, almost. Almost 10 years.
Yeah, she probably knew, you know.
She knew.
Probably knew.
But I had never seen it. I'd never seen it, so it was really cool to see. It was really cool to see.
You had never seen it?
No. Like, I've seen a lack of Disney movies. I have not seen that many. I enjoy them when I watch them.
Right. But,
Annie and her friends from high school, they've all seen all of them, Cara. So it's like, they're like, John, how do you not know what happens in this and this and this? And I'm like, I just never saw it.
Do you just not have a heart, or what happened?
I was too busy like playing Mortal Kombat and like ripping out people's hearts. You know what I mean? I was like, finish him. And I was like, finishing him. So I probably should have been like, watching Disney. I was just playing Street Fighter 2 and video rotting my brain.
They're not really like a guy thing. I don't know. You know, I
mean, that's true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you're a teenage boy, I don't think you're like, I want to go see Aladdin.
Yeah. But, you know, you're missing out.
It's true. I wish I had that knowledge. Cara, I want to transition now. You have been a longtime casting director, which is why I'm so excited that you're here. Just kind of going back, what got you into casting? Like, how did you find that space?
So, I mean, as a kid at home, I was like, we would go to the movies every weekend.
Yeah.
So kind of, I don't know, being in the business might have always been there. I just didn't realize I wanted to do it. And I was one of those people like, Oscar Sunday, I would sit and watch it since I was like little. And so I'm one of those people like before the DVR, like if I would not leave the house on Oscar Sunday, I would sit there and watch it. But, and my brother had kind of been in the business working for Michael Moore. And, you know, you live in, even though I was in Palm Desert, like, you know, you see things. And I didn't think it was going to be all fairy tales and red carpet. Right. So I was graduating from UCLA, and a lot of people know I actually have a 4-year degree in sociology.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Wow.
I thought I was going to teach because I love kids. I had babysat in high school, nannied during college, even though I didn't like have to work. I just wanted extra money. And then the summer camp I went to, which was overnight from like 8 until I transitioned over to being a counselor, I had new little kids every 2 weeks.
Oh, wow.
So I was always like good with kids. Mm-hmm. But I was like, I think I want to work with adults. And the entertainment industry just sounded really good to me. But, you know, there's like 20 million things to do. Mm-hmm. My brother was like, go talk to one of his friends who actually used to babysit me about what you can do, because she was like an assistant to the head of Universal. She said, oh, go sign up for a temp agency. But she said, look, you can produce, you can do this, but you have to decide. Mm-hmm. So sign up for Apple One. Or something.
Apple One. I remember Apple One. Yeah, I remember Apple One.
In entertainment. And I did. So they had me working with a few different entertainment people, but it was mostly mostly managers and agents and production companies and radio stations. And I was just doing front desk work. Finally, I ended up going to work for this woman named Roxanne Davis, who still to this day is a manager. But 2 weeks in, she was like I was originally a casting director and somebody came to her and said, I want you to cast this, like, I think it was a spec commercial. So long ago, I remember one of the guys was like, I'll get naked, I don't care.
You're like, interesting.
We were doing some kind of like sports thing and they had to be in shape.
Okay.
So we did the casting session. I really liked it. And I was like, look, if I cannot do this on my own, I'm going to choose something else. And I was sitting with my friend eating dinner. He was about to open up a production company, but they had to do what you do generally, which is make a spec commercial with like special effects, because they were going to be a after production house, as well as like, you know, mm-hmm. you come to me and I'll supply you with everything for whatever you're shooting. He said, oh, I hate sessions so much. Like most directors I know, they don't want to be there for the first round of people because you see a lot of people and not everybody's going to be perfect.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I said, look, I'll do it for you for free. And I did it and I really liked it. And then, I mean, it's been like, I've been doing this since 2003. It's almost 20 years. I mean, it's crazy. I'm turning 44 in like 2 weeks.
Happy early birthday.
Yeah, happy birthday.
Thank you. So I like fell in love with it. And then, you know, I didn't do the traditional route. So I stayed with Roxanne for a little bit and learned what I need to learn from her. And then, you know, I worked with like Francine Selkirk, just being a freelance casting assistant. Mm-hmm. I did stuff for Pat Melton. I kind of like learned what I needed from everybody. But mm-hmm. then I also am like a sponge. So John knows I do a lot of independent features. Like when I had to do my first deal memo, I had to call my friend Ryan Hayden and be like, hey, this is a big feature for me with like Sean Christian in it from Days of Our Lives. I'm like, I don't know how to do a memo.
Yeah.
He sent me one and then I was fine. After that, I was good with doing features and just kind of knowing like what everybody would want. So I'm really like self-taught, you know, commercials. I know how to deal with those because I worked with Judy Elkins for like a long time, you know, yeah. And through all of these jobs with other people, I was still running my business. And like a lot of people, you have to do stuff for free. So somehow the schools knew I was casting and they gave me a lot of my first jobs.
Yeah, I was curious about that. Well, first of all, Shout out to Ryan Hayden, who I used to be at class with at Playhouse West, Cara.
Oh my God.
We used to do my, now this is a long time ago. I'd love to hear his name. How did you get involved, casting for USC and doing a lot of college casting? I think that's really interesting and pretty cool.
Yeah, I think like UCLA, I feel like one of the people I went to high school with was in the film program. Mm-hmm. And it's funny, I don't think he went for undergrad, but somehow I ran into him on campus because I was visiting. I don't know. So I feel like with UCLA, a lot of it is due to Dallas King. Because I started casting his thesis stuff, and then people were so impressed with what I had found. And you know, student films, because John, I think you've done one or two for me.
Sure.
I mean, you guys work for copy, credit, and meal.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I just feel like everybody, in terms of casting, it helps the students when you guys have somebody's name that you can hold on to and recognize, you know, because giving your time, you want to know that it may be a good school, but it helps to know people who are involved. And John knows, like, I'm very, how I write my breakdowns. At UCLA, that helped. And then I think through the grapevine, they had heard about me. USC, I feel like Jennifer Warren, who's the head of the directing program, was trying to do seminars, was going to start to do seminars at the beginning of every semester, where she wanted a casting director, the services that like post breakdowns, and like they had backstage. And the idea was the seminar was for incoming MFA students so they could understand how things work from like posting your breakdown to running the casting session. Mm. And my friend was part of the Association of Women Directors and she saw this post and she gave me the post. I answered Jennifer and Jennifer's like, yep, come on down. And she was really impressed with my speech. And then I feel like a couple weeks later, a student was like having an impossible time finding their lead actor, reached out to me and said, can you help me? and I helped them, and Jennifer was just like blown away when she like when she saw the audition and was like, oh my god, this is what you got them. So Jennifer started the ball rolling there for me, and then from there I think I just, you know, word of mouth was just that I was very easy to work with. I could get good actors and a lot of and actors who could who wouldn't do free work generally, but when they saw my name would come out. You know, right now I'm working on their feature class. And I'm sure I've gotten them a lot of people that, you know me, because it's that is a big time commitment. You know, they're doing 11 shorts, but still, that's a lot of time. You
and
know?
Can I toot your horn? The other thing is I feel like you're not afraid of hard work. That's something I've noticed. I get like emails from her on like a Sunday morning. I'm like, what are you doing? And she's like, there's this project you'd be right for. I'm like, first of all, thank you for remembering me. That is like actors, like it's like actors love that when that happens, because it happens, but it's, you know, but second of all, it's like I get random emails sometimes at random times, but it means you're working or thinking about it. And I think that's a really impressive thing that you work so hard. And I've seen that when you're, you know, running sessions and running around. So I think all those other things for sure. But, you know, I've seen your work ethic, and that's, you know, that's really impressive. So I think people respond to that.
That helps. I mean, I don't know if you've, like, I'll be sending emails at midnight and then I'll recheck to make sure people get them. This Sunday, I'm going to run a callback because this week is too busy and it needs to happen. I mean, yeah, I work very hard. I think right now I have like 6 things out. I feel like, you know, I'm doing 3 features at the same time.
Wow.
2 shorts. And I'm doing, you know, so I love what I do, and I'd rather be busy and working. And I'm also helping London Stroud casting a few days a week now, and Jeff Hardwick. So yeah, I mean, I love what I do. And I also think, you know, that's what
does the fire fit all those irons? Does the fire fit all those irons?
I have an intern now.
Corbin, pull that. That's pretty good. Pull that quote. I just made that up. Pull that later.
Kinda.
You have an intern now. Yeah.
I mean, there's weeks where I don't sleep, but, you know, like a lot of hours. And now that I'm producing, can you imagine me producing a short and then having all these movies going on? Because the last short was 3 weeks ago. And yes, so I was producing the short plus, you know, making sure that these movies had choices.
Each one of these is its own job. I cannot believe that. Yeah.
Times 6. Yeah.
That's crazy. Which what do you like to cast the most? Do you like to do like more commercials, shorts, features? Like, what is your favorite thing to cast?
I think, you know, I love my... I like my commercials. They're fun. But I love all my narratives, whether they're shorts or features or my web series. Those are fun for me because I have a little bit more say on, like, who books the job. I can recommend people. You know, with commercials, it's great, but we kind of send our choices to the director and they tell us what they want. And I think for me, people are like, well, what project do you love the most? I'd have to tell you, I love all my projects equally. And this is going to sound strange because they're all very different and they kind of do different things. So look, I love my projects that make a difference. Like, you know, last year there was it's called Young Kings, and I think it's still being edited, but a family was nice enough to share their story, and so was the son that this kind of character was based on. The names were changed for everybody's kind of safety.
Gotcha.
But he came back from Iraq with severe PTSD after being dishonorably discharged. They had treated him before he came home, but then when he came back home, cut off all treatment, the VA. And it was severe, and he started to do crazy things, and it escalated so much, and he just didn't get the right treatment. And I think the parents are doing the best they can, but a little bit of them thought, look, God and church will, you know, help. But she did go to the VA, and the VA just was like, he was dishonorably discharged. That's the end of it. So it got to a point where he ended up shooting his girlfriend in front of his parents.
Oh, wow.
The whole... and I think they decided to share the story because, you know, they wanted to help other families that are struggling with a son or a daughter or a loved one that has severe PTSD issues. It's like, what do you do? And I think they wanted for people to see it before it escalated to that point. And mental health issues are really important to talk about, and they're not much. And this was kind of a real look and in the African-American community, no offense to anybody, but the fact is it's not talked about much in that community either. And this was an African-American family. I mean, my dad is black and he was always like, therapy, you don't do therapy. And this is very kind of, but while that was going on, I had a comedy going on, and I love my comedies because it's so fun to find like good comedic actors, you know. John's done comedy stuff for me before.
Yeah.
And that was a very specialized thing. You can't just get anybody. You being funny just comes from a natural place. Mm-hmm. So I love all my projects because I can be working on six different things that are six different genres. Like, I'm doing two horror films right now. Like, sometimes it's fun just to do like a you know, horror thriller thing. So I think each project lends a different thing and allows me to really stretch my casting ability and ability to find actors. You know what I mean? And that, I think, so it's not just one project that's my favorite. It's, I love them all. But yeah, I mean, the commercials are fine, but my shorts and my web series and all that, you know.
Cara, you spend a lot of time in the audition room. What stands out to you, you know, for the actors listening? What stands out to you, you know, for actors? How do they, you know, stand out, or how do you know, what are things you're looking for?
So it's been a lot of self-tape right now, but so everybody knows, as soon as I can go back to doing first calls in person and I feel it's safe, I will. Mm-hmm. Somebody said to me, oh, you should just go do it, and everybody should just you should be fine. And I was like, I have to see a lot of people for the first round, and my reputation means everything to me, and I don't want somebody coming to my office and they get COVID because they're in a waiting room with 10 people. Yeah. I just don't feel safe right now. I have to be responsible.
Just open the window in the casting room that every casting room has. non-existent window. No casting rooms have windows. Why, folks? Why?
I mean, I go for sound. No outside noise.
Right? I know. It's a sound. I know. I'm just
saying. Sound issue. But even the waiting room, I just don't feel comfortable right now. Like, I even managed to get COVID, and I'm like super safe. But in the room, I think I look for somebody to number one, I want to know that you're an easy person to deal with. That's something I probably assess within the first 5 seconds. Mm-hmm. It's not that I need you to come in and be like, hi, how are you? And be super chatty. But I mean, even if you're coming in for a character that's super serious, I just want to know that like I'm dealing with somebody who's easy. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, good point.
I feel like connection to the character is important to me. It's not about you guys being off book. I'll tell you if I need you to be off book. Mm-hmm. I don't care if you're holding that paper. If your connection to the character comes through, then I am sold. Mm-hmm. And then I feel like it's nice if you guys bring some of your own creativity into it. You know what I mean? If everybody did the same thing, then movies would be boring. Mm-hmm. But when Brad Pitt is asked to do a role, yes, Brad Pitt brings what that the director wants, but Brad Pitt will bring what he thinks from his personality will fit into the character. Mm-hmm. And John, I'll tell you, when I do descriptions, I give you guys as much as you need to know, but not so much that I'm throwing the whole kitchen sink at you, and you can't make your own decisions with what kind of you have.
When you were mentioning comedy, I was thinking about that time I auditioned for you. It was like three astronauts, a Russian one and another one. And we got to improvise. You let us improvise, and we went way out there. And I've talked about that audition. That was so much fun. I don't know if you remember, but it was
a bite of alien. Yes.
And it was so, and I had a good group because I was with a couple, two other guys, and we were all dying. It was so great. But the point is, I remember you saying like, just go for it. And it, you know, sometimes it's like, oh, what does that mean? But you really empowered the actors in that room. I remember that. And we were just like, we were not by the script at all, but you were like, yeah, I want to see the comedy, the characters, the relationships, you know? So yeah. And I thought that was really interesting. That was cool to have that freedom that you know, and that empowerment. Yeah.
Yeah, I try. And you know, the ability to take direction, I think, is important too. And John knows, I mean, I really like, that's what I hate about the self-tape stuff now. You've been in the room with me, like, everybody knows how much I love working with you guys and like giving you direction. This is what I miss it a lot.
So Cara, if someone, this is a good question. A question comes up a lot with my students and stuff. If someone's submitting a self-tape and maybe it says two takes or doesn't really say, and they want to send two, do you like to see a big amount of variety, a little bit? Do you like, you know, just where do you kind of land with like first and second takes if they're going to send you two?
Two. I think two is good.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But as far as differences or similarities is what I'm saying.
Oh, I feel like if you're going to send two different takes, and John, you know, most of the time I'll ask for two different Well, okay. So with me, if you guys have two scenes, then I will not ask you to do, then I will not say do the scene twice and make different choices each time. Because if I give you two different scenes, generally that second scene is going to have you go somewhere else. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. My feeling is, and if I have one scene for you, then I usually tell you guys to do it twice. If you're going to do each of your scenes twice and send me two different takes, I want to see a difference. I feel like you want to show me your acting range and ability, so you might as well do it. Mm-hmm. I want to see something different if you're going to go down that path.
Yeah. And what about, this is something I'm actually kind of curious. Do you think like if someone's going to go, let's say, quote unquote, bigger, do you think that should be the second take? Because sometimes I feel like it's good to start a little more grounded and maybe the second take is a little bigger, or does it not really matter the order to you? Just because, I mean, with self-tapes, it's like you know, you don't have to watch the whole thing. So it's like, if you're not taken, I'm sure you do, but some people don't. So my point is, you know, is what do you think about that as far as what to lead with?
I think lead with what we asked for. Mm-hmm. So it would be the more grounded take and what was in the direction and kind of what is in the script and adding yourself. And then I think the second take is where if you're going to go bigger, you can go bigger, but you have to be very careful about going bigger.
This
is not theater. You know, when I've done theater casting before, this is camera. It's right here on you. And we don't net that bigger has to be careful with that. That's kind of my advice to you, so it doesn't come off like theatery, you know?
I like that Cara put the camera like 2 inches from her face. Yeah, most self-tapes, are they a little bit further away? I just want you to know, Cara. We do a little further away.
At least shoulder up.
It's just your eyes, Corbin. It's just the eyes.
Hi, I'm Corbin Coyle.
But you guys get that. I mean, I think you just have to be careful with that. Bigger is fine, but you have to do bigger in a way that makes sense for a film.
Yeah.
How do you feel about like, I guess a two-part question, like with wardrobe. So I know the Stranger Things, that actor, that famous self-tape, he did a bunch of different wardrobes for his whole self-tape, which I thought was interesting. And I'm always just like, I'm still wearing the same thing. Whoops. but like, I was just curious, like if you like people to really dress for the role, do you like people to really, you know, kind of sell you on that they can just be moved into that scene? Like what are your thoughts on that with wardrobe?
Look, if you're going to go for the wardrobe, then have it make sense. Mm-hmm. So there was somebody that was coaching and we saw kind of the self. I think somehow I saw the self tape. I don't know how. It wasn't a project I was doing. Or no, I saw the show after. That's why. Okay. I saw the show she was auditioning for. But if you're going to go for the wardrobe, make sure it makes sense. Mm-hmm. She was supposed to be kind of like a hot, like, Latina singer, J-Lo vibes, and the earrings were like very feathery Indian. And if you're gonna do it, make sure you do it right. Because that won't take us out of the scene as the casting director, because we're like, Or it could take the director of the scene. This is the thing that people have to understand, is that I can send over my selects, but at the end of the day, I don't have the final decision. Mm-hmm. And directors can be very funny like that.
Yeah, yeah. Carl, I want to jump in with that, with because I love what you're saying. What's it like working with kind of up and coming directors? Do you feel like you have to do a little more, you know, explaining, or do you feel like, oh, they already got the vision? You know, when you're working with like USC or UCLA, how is that different? Maybe I'm just curious.
I think it just depends. I think sometimes I get people that like, they don't understand, the auditioning process is new to them, and working with a casting director is new to them. Mm-hmm. So there's a little bit of me having to guide them through, and they don't really like, you know, and having to tell them I have everything from posting the notice, which you will see before I post it. But after that, let me go ahead and I'll get you the auditions. If you have some recommendations, fine. And I think that process is new for them. Mm-hmm. And sometimes there's things I have to explain that they don't understand. Like, I know that, like, if you guys audition for a supporting role or a lead role that I cannot, it's unprofessional of me to call you guys and then ask you to come in and be a featured extra.
Yeah.
Okay. Right. We like that person, but we want them. Yeah. For this. Yeah, can you call them? You're like,
No.
Yeah.
It just looks unprofessional. You know what I mean? I've told people, if you really want them, then you're going to have to give them some extra lines and sell it, but I can't be the person that contacts. Mm-hmm. So sometimes I think with these new directors, it's teaching them the business. I think what a lot of people don't understand is it's not just about finding the actor. A good casting director understands that there's a whole other business behind it after posting the roles. Mm-hmm. You know, there's people want other things. There's the business side to deal with that you have to think about what's appropriate and what's not. So sometimes I deal with that. And sometimes even with my directors that are not in school and are doing a bigger project for the first time, there's a little bit of me teaching them the ropes. You know, like my last feature, we got really lucky and we got Eldon Henson. Okay. You know, from Daredevil.
Oh, yeah. Yep. Mm-hmm.
And so this was the first time he kind of booked a name. So it was a little bit of me, the director, and it was an independent film, walking him through like, okay, Eldon's going to want this. This is kind of the standard rate for a name actor. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I have to deal with that stuff when it's new directors doing their first independent and they know they want a name. So I would tell you guys, it's not that they don't know how to make the film. You know, by the time they get to me, they've done a couple of films. And with USC, they have them kind of do a couple of things. It's more teaching them, like, how you handle things appropriately.
Yes. Yeah.
From a business standpoint.
Yeah.
And the realities of, I know you would love to get a name in your film, but, like, there's no workaround for what it's going to take and what it's going to cost you. And, like, you have me. And I have agents and managers in town who will give me a deal, but to a point.
Yeah. I remember, Cara, my movie Solver, the independent film, when we were trying to get names, and it was like, we couldn't afford non-names. It was like, I don't even know who this person is, and we can't afford them. So like the names were like out of our, but yes, there's certain things where it's like, I can do a little wiggling here, but like there's a certain threshold that's like, it's not, I'm just trying to let you know, it's not going to be possible.
Yeah, or explaining to somebody, explaining to a director, looks, Sandy Martin is going to cost you between X and X because she's been in, I understand she's a character actor, but Sandy has been in movies that have been nominated for Oscars and films that have been nominated for Emmys and stuff. Once they get there, even though you feel like they're not a name, like,
right, yes,
like
yes,
they're a still household name, like, you know, on the Goldbergs, the mom who plays the actor who plays the mom, who, I'm sorry, Wendy, I'm blanking on your last name. Everybody knows who she is. She's a household name, but Sandy is not.
Right.
But you have to look at the caliber of film she's in, and there's plenty of people that know who she is. And when you say, I got the woman who played What's-His-Face's mom in Three Billboards in Ebbing,
Yeah.
There you go.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
And it's the agents and managers that have to deal with. And so I think it's a lot of just with new directors, kind of like new directors doing their features, maybe, or trying to take the next step up. Just, you know, I become a good teacher and I'm very patient because you have to be, you know. I kind of like, this is the advice I'll give you. If I feel like you can go down the path you kind of want me to, I will. But if I feel like it's going to be like detrimental to me and the ability for me to, you know, over the years, it's like, John, I can call you and say, look, I have this. It's not paying. It's a good project. You'll consider it. But I only am able to do that because I've really
gotten paid before. You know what I mean? If I didn't get that chatter earlier, then I'm not coming back in, right? Yes.
Well, the other thing is, you know me. I've nurtured our relationship. Yes. I'm not, you know, a casting director who kind of doesn't. I nurture things. I'm very good about that.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was just thinking about, you know, you cast me in The Rich and the Ruthless, which I just saw is on BET Plus.
Yes.
With Victoria. How did you get connected with Victoria? Because I think I saw you guys did a movie together too or something. How did you connect with Victoria, who's awesome? She's great.
Yes, I love Victoria. Oh, so we're on our fifth season of that, by the way.
Oh my gosh. Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah. Amazing. I still haven't watched all the seasons. In fact, the last season, because we were in such a hurry to cast, I don't know what happened at the end, actually.
Amazing.
I still have to read the whole script. It's fun. It's if you haven't watched it, she basically like takes, you know, she was like the queen of soap operas for a long time. Just so you guys know, it's like she takes all the ridiculous situations that happened to her during the time she was on there that were either funny and some were frustrating, you know, when you're on a show she was on a show for a lot of years.
Yeah.
And made this series called The Rich and the Ruthless about a soap opera that has different issues through the five seasons, but she just made it into a comedy and took everything that was frustrating and just like kind of turned it into like a joke. I mean, John, I'll tell you, he was like some bitter boyfriend that came on set and like tried to like kill.
True.
So I'm glad she was able to turn this into something positive. I think, you know, and look, Victoria loves this show, and you know, there's no, I don't think there's any hard feelings, just so she doesn't like watch us and like, what
happened?
But Victoria and I met because I was doing like probably one of my first features. It was non-union. She was brought in to play like the lead, the mom, and she was also brought in to fix the script. Mm-hmm. Now, this non-union feature was paying nothing. So she was really impressed with what I did and the caliber of talent I was able to get with deferred pay. And so when The Rich and the Ruthless came around, she was like, I have the show. She's like, I can't, you know, she said, look, it's an indie. We're on a low budget. Victoria is like a go-getter like me, and good for her, because she just, you guys know, it didn't have a home. She just wrote this, raised all the money herself, and through five seasons, we've been on an independent budget. And you know, we have people like Victoria's in it. Richard Brooks, who's a known actor.
Yep.
You know, I'm forgetting Dawn's last name, but she was in A Different World and still very much working. You know, Michael Collier is a comedian. He's great. And so everybody like came together because it was Victoria and it was such a great script. And like, we've all just, you know, people did this because they really love Victoria. And, you know, there were some, you know, it was indie rates for people that are at my name. I mean, that's the reality.
I think there's this idea of like, you know, momentum, you know, gathers people and stuff like that. Yeah. And, you know, Victoria and yourself too, I'm just thinking about that. That's one of the things about like, you know, being a doer or creating stuff is like, people want to work. People want to be, you know, with people that are doing stuff. And so they'll, you know, you can find people, but it takes energy, you know, not everyone always has that energy, but yes, I think that's great.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny. We've become a family. We call R&R for short, but mm-hmm. we're a family through this season. One of our actresses just had something else going on. So I think she made like the funny soap opera thing where she's just not going to have an explanation of why Valencia looks completely different. You know, I think it's going to be the kind of soap opera joke. It's like, sure. Oh, yeah, well, whatever. But we're a family. Like Richard Brooks now, I've produced his first short and we're trying to do other things. I'm helping Richard teach acting class. Mm. Richard and I have become friends. And when we did Anticipation, we actually we had a small crew, but we used pretty much everybody from R&R. And Victoria was in that too.
Love
so we're like a family, you yeah. know.
How do you you briefly mentioned it, but like nourish these relationships? It feels like you're already so caring, and like I feel like you're very open to people, but like how do you make sure that like you find the right people that feel the same way about you and you keep nourishing that? Like it's such a beautiful thing that I think you do.
I think it's my ability to just be very caring and respectful, and it's not like I'm able to keep in touch with everybody every week, but I think it's just I have this I understand that you need to be respectful and caring, and for me not to kind of I guess not going to my actors with stuff that I know that they're not gonna like, being in tune with who they are. You know, I make an effort to get to know my actors, and so it's just like when I send you stuff, it's because I know that you'll be good at the material. Or if it's something you haven't done before, I've seen you act well enough to know that this is something that like you would love to expand your acting chops. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I think it's not the amount of time I keep in touch. Mm-hmm. I think it's just how I treat people when I interact with them and when we have contact. Mm-hmm. And it's also like, look, I mean, sometimes I can't answer every thank you email, but I do my best to answer everything. And I think it's more that, John, right? Because sometimes I don't talk to John for a couple of months. Yeah. But, you know, when I reach out, it's always, I think it's my ability to be genuine. I think that is what probably helps me. And with the agents and managers, you know, it's me being nice. You know, not being nasty, even when sometimes I kind of have to put my foot down. I'm always very respectful about it. And just trying to kind of nourish those relationships. I mean, I've had projects where I can't find anybody and somebody will always come through. And sometimes it's the stuff that doesn't pay.
Cara, I was just looking. You first brought me in. I'm looking right here. They said I have April 16th. 2010, folks. 20
wow. Really?
For something called Spilt Milk. I don't remember.
Oh my God. Spilt yes. Milk. Yes.
So Spilt Milk. But then what's interesting is I'm looking here, you know, then it was 2 years later, Pharaoh goes bang. Okay, yeah. And then it was like 5 years later. Then it was that was Rich and Ruthless. Then it was, I don't know, Faded, Cuck.
Cuck was
that was
an interesting one.
Yeah, I think I've used that when I've taught, you know, and then some other, then there's a bunch of other ones more recently and stuff.
Cuck was a little bit more controversial about guy who like, oh God, it's been so long since, okay. So basically had a mom who was played by Sally Kirkland, who was kind of crazy.
Yeah.
Sat all day at his computer watching like porn and like all these other videos, and then when he finally gets out of the house, we see him go through this adventure of like getting hooked up with people that are like cuck videos. You know, a Middle Eastern family where it was a crazy movie, but our lead actor Zach did oh my God such a good job and gained 20 pounds for the role.
Wow. No. Really?
Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
That is crazy. Yeah, I was just looking at it. And so you definitely, so I think I love what you said, because I think that's really true. It's not even about talking to that person every week. Being like, oh, I got to be with them every week. But it's like you said, it's having that courtesy, which I think is important, of being like, hey, this is a great project, or this is really interesting. And nourishing that, and then, you know, showing up and being there and following through. I think that's also, you know, 'cause that stuff can carry people, you know? So I think that's really wonderful.
Yeah. And in the room, I think no matter, and John's been there when I was running in-person sessions, which will probably happen again, there were days when I had four different rooms going on, and I've had days where like a casting assistant left me when I was in another room. And John seen me overwhelmed, but no matter how overwhelmed I am, I always make you guys feel welcome. And I think you've probably been there on days when I'm like, I'm sorry I seem scattered. I'm sorry I seem a little edgy. Like, it's not you.
Yeah,
I think that's also really important, is that I've made, like, in the room, I always make people feel welcome, because I hear horror stories about actors going into rooms and it's just like the casting director is so stressed out that, like, you know, there's nothing.
Cara, how do actors get on your radar, you know, or stay on your radar? Is there, you know, it's kind of a little more challenging right now. Any thoughts on that?
I mean, if you email me your headshot and resume, I actually keep a file in my email of like actors I like or would like to see. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, if I can, and I would say 80% of the time I can, I mean, I post my things for self-submission because look, I agents and managers, I love you. But the fact of the matter is sometimes there's stuff that you guys know you want to do and don't really care about taking the pay cut. Mm-hmm. So when I can, I do, you know, and I'm a casting director that will go through every submission. I mean, for me, I look at the picture first to make sure you fit what I'm thinking, and then I'll go into the resume. But I go through every single page of my submissions. Mm. And the other good thing is that a lot of casting directors archive their projects and then kind of erase their eco casts. I don't do that. I actually keep every single breakdown on my breakdown list, and I have and if we're still doing CAS, then, you know, I'd have those videos. I don't know anymore. But on EcoCast, like, I keep all my videos because I've actually called in people from, I've gone back to other projects and been like, I can't find this, so hey, can you speak Punjabi? Let me go back.
That's awesome.
Love that.
What do you look for when you're scrolling through those tiny little photos of headshots? Is there anything that catches your attention that you, is it like, I don't know, it's a very generic question, obviously, but like, is it lighting? Is it like just fits perfectly for the role? Like, what do you kind of, what sparks in your brain?
It's more fits perfectly for the role and like a good photo. I mean, you know, I have to say, for me, if like it's a clearly taken selfie and I'm doing like, I need you for a lead role, even if you look the part, I might not open that up. I don't know if you're going to have the chops if you can't even get, you know what I mean, that together. Mm-hmm. And with those, sometimes I'll take a chance and look at you, because maybe for a smaller supporting on a student film, like I can give you a chance, you know. But initially, I'm looking for a good shot of a good shot and like for you to fit kind of the mold that I've, like the description I've put. You know? Gotcha.
Yeah, because I know there's some like headshot photographers, they do like almost like very artsy, they're very beautiful, but they're not really headshots, you know? Like, do you prefer it? That's too far, right? That's like too much of like...
It's too much. I mean, yeah, I feel like, well, unless I like put out something where, look, I had to put out crazy things where I've needed contortionists.
Crazy. Yeah.
Yes, then use that as the photo. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Because the thing is, I'll look at the photo that is like there initially will get me to go look at the other photos. So I'm also a casting director that's like, this photo looks good, but I want to make sure you're not hiding anything.
Interesting.
So I will go and look at the other pictures for backup. Mm-hmm. Now, I can't look at real every time. Sometimes if I'm on the fence, I will. So those actors who have older... A lot of older actors have stuff from the 80s. My advice to you guys is try to update it, because it's just it's too hard for me to tell where you're at if all I have is like old Magnum PI, you know?
Sure.
Yeah. They've already rebooted that show twice or something. So let's get on a newer thing.
So I'm okay with the artsy stuff if it makes sense. Like for Jack and Lou, this thing I'm doing, we need a dancer. So I'm cool if you're going to put a dance photo up, then I can go into your other photos.
Gotcha. For like, but for like a dance, yeah, specific skill. That makes sense.
But that dance photo, you should be like, you should be facing forward so I can see your face. You know what I mean? So I can see what you look like, not like a side of you, but, you know.
Yeah. That's a very beautiful pirouette, I guess.
That you're jumping, but I can't see anything, you know.
Oh my gosh, I love that. Well, we want to get to one of our favorite parts of the podcast, which is your best
bad acting.
Okay. This is where we get to put you, Cara Sullivan, on the hot seat. So what we're going to do is Corbin's going to send you a fun quote from a movie in the chat.
Okay.
And, you're gonna do it. You can give it if you want to do it like the movie. If you want to put your own spin on it, give it an. It's more for fun. It's for it to be bad, and we might give you like a redirect, but it's just to kind of have a laugh, and there's no pressure on it. So, do you recognize this quote at all?
No. So we're just gonna get fun. So I have a fun story for you about me and acting before.
Okay. Yes. Oh, sure. Okay, yes, yeah. We want to hear it. Yes.
Okay. So. I've been put on the hot seat before, and I got put on the hot seat at Q&A recently where she's like, you look great. Have you ever thought about being an actress? And I'm like, no, I'm not a good actress. So as a favor to two of my productions, I decided to be a featured extra, all right? Mm-hmm. Or an extra. I didn't think I'd be featured. I was like, I'm just going to come and help you out. It's fine. One thing that wasn't so embarrassing, but the second one is a little bit more embarrassing is, so during the auditions, there was like a barista during Cuck. Okay.
Okay. Oh, wow. You're in full circle. Okay.
Yeah. During I think the, I don't, during the coffee scene, and the barista gets mad at Zach and says, get the fuck out. Sorry. There's the cursing.
No worries.
And the director was like, oh my God, Cara, you did so good on the auditions. Cause John, I'll tell you, like, I try to give you guys something when you're in the room with me, if I don't have a reader, because I think you guys appreciate that.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, well, I'll do it. So I decided to do it because he was like, you're so good and I don't want to book anybody else. And he's like, yeah. I see how you talk to agents when you're mad, you know? So
same thing.
So I did that, right? Fine. That went well. I think I did good, but like, I'm glad they didn't do a close up. I don't know about like. And then on the Pot Wins, which I think you may have auditioned for. I'm not sure.
I think I might have, yeah.
Kevin Sorbo and Barry Bostwick were in that, right? So we're auditioning people. I haven't met either of them because they're already attached to the project. They're like, hey, can you just, I knew it was independent and we're a family because we had done a movie before with these guys. And so I'm like, okay, I'll come one of the bar days and like be an extra. So I'm thinking they're just going to like sit me down at the bar. Fine. They're like, no, you're going to be a featured extra in the scene where like 10 girls come running toward Kevin and are like pawing at him. Now, I have never met Kevin. I am the casting director. And of course, they like put me, so I'm like one of the first people to go dodge him. And so it was just like, oh, come on, guys. So afterwards, of course, I go up to Kevin. I'm like, hi, I'm the casting director. I just was like helping out to be like a good sport.
And he's like, sure you are. Sure you are.
You cast yourself.
But no acting for me. And now I think during that Q&A, it was for another project that is probably going to be moving forward. It was just like a short proof of concept.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, oh yeah, now I'm going to put you in the series. And I'm like, oh no.
I got to be recurring.
Right? I'm like, okay, maybe you should just have me say like two things. Like, be a waitress and then call it a day. Pull a Stephen King with me.
Yeah.
And in the last film, it was funny. They actually changed the name of the character to Cara as like an homage to me. And we had the screening, and my friends were like chuckling, going, ah.
We see. We understand.
We know what happened.
I know. The character name was Karen, and then the producer was like, I don't like that.
No, let's change
like,
it.
We're renaming it. So, okay. I don't
All right, enough stalling. Now we get to the good stuff. That was good though. That was good. I like that you stalled for a little bit. And yeah, now we get to it.
Good
no,
story. I don't know
story.
What this is from.
This is from Finding Nemo. It's Dory.
Finding Nemo. Because we're doing animation. Okay.
So, oh, I gotcha. All right. We're
whenever you're ready.
I don't remember this from the movie. All right. Is it Dory or is it
Nemo? It's Dory, but do whatever how you feel it.
Oh, okay. Just keep swimming. Just swimming, swimming, swimming. What do? We swim, swim.
Oh my God, that was good. That was really good.
Fun. Oh my God. Do you have a redirect?
I remember she like has amnesia.
Yes, yes,
totally. Yes, totally.
It was a little bit of, you know.
Totally. Yeah, I do because we were talking about all those soaps earlier. I want you to do it as a soap star.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. Well, I was watching a little General Hospital today.
There you go. Give a sprinkle of General Hospital.
All right, here we go. Just keep swimming. Just keep swimming, swimming, swimming. What do? We swim. We swim. Booked it.
I love it.
You did. Oh, a little dramatic. You added the drama for sure. For sure.
Oh, my God.
Like General Hospital had, you know, the bedside had somebody dying today, and you know, crying, and yeah.
And you're saying that at the hospital bed, of course.
Definitely. Yeah. I was looking up like longest shows like on TV, and I think Guiding Light, I think, was like has been on what was on. It's not anymore, but it was like the soap that's been on the longest of like 40, 50 years. Do you guys know what animated show has been on the longest?
Oh God,
it's gonna seem obvious once I say it.
The Simpsons.
Simpsons. Yeah. Oh, Simpsons has been on. And then what about primetime TV shows?
The Simpsons. Oh. I don't know, like King of the Hill or one of them? No. You're talking about like regular?
Yeah.
Ooh, that's a hard one. That's still on now?
No. One of them is, and the two that I saw that were the most, one is Law and Order, like the Law and Order.
Oh, SVU, yeah.
Like that. Yeah, like one of those is, one of those, I think it's SVU. And then Gunsmoke back in the day. Who would know that? But it was kind of interesting because I was like trying to figure out, I was like, what are these? Like I was kind of doing a little. Yeah. But it was funny because like the soap is actually, the Guiding Light is of all of them, like had the longest.
Really?
You know, my, oh, yeah.
Wow. Even longer than in Gunsmoke, they still play it on Nickelodeon like during.
I think it's like meaning like new episodes. Not yeah. But I mean, longest on TV, it could be like a Gunsmoke or something still doing. But there's a little TV trivia for y'all. Awesome. Well, Cara, this was amazing. This was so lovely. I mean, you are one of the lovely people that I just love that's in this business. And, you know, when I walk into a room and you're there and it just lights me up. And so I just think it's great that, you know, people know you and know how great you are and you continue to work and stay so busy. It's really great. And just being a friend and people and someone that we worked together for so long, I just think it's wonderful. So
thank you guys for having me. I mean, it was a pleasure. John, you know, you've always been super supportive of anything I'm doing, so I really appreciate it. And Corbin, it's nice to meet you.
It's great to be
I mean, the thing is, I have to say with John, no matter if it's free paying $20, you know, I know I can always reach out. So I appreciate it. And it's been nice to do the podcasting and all that because I feel like I get to share some of my knowledge, which is great.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, for sure.
And I think, you know, not being in the room right now, this has kind of given me a way to like reach out to actors and just impart some of my
Cara, I did just buy a Tesla, so now it's 25 is my minimum. I can't do 20 anymore.
But you're not paying gas anymore.
That's true. So, Cara, this was lovely having you. Thank you so much for being here. You're the best.
Thanks,
Cara. See you later.
You
bye. Too. Have a good
bye.
One.
Bye. Thanks.
Thank you for listening to another wonderful episode of the Moving Spotlight
Podcast. Such a good episode.
Man, Cars are the best.
Yeah.
We have TikTok, Corbin.
We have a TikTok, everybody.
We have the TikTok. So if you want to check us out, it's at the Moving Spotlight. We post videos twice a day.
Not true. We've done it once.
Where we posted two. We're going to try to get a little more regular with it. But go on there, follow us, check it out. It's hip.
Yeah. I don't know if you've heard of it. TikTok?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's cool.
Well, and we might soon get on Be Real, which is the next.
That is the next one. We'll get there. Once again, we'll be behind, and then another app will
come out. We'll be there in 2023. We'll get there. So thanks for listening. We appreciate you, and have a good one.
Thanks.
Thank you for listening to the
Moon and Fox Eye Podcast.